Blog Talk Radio.
It is what it is.
Yo, yo, welcome to Collective Minds Radio. This is your host, Brother Kevin, with my other host, Rigel Starr, and my brother, Mufasa Ra. What's up, y'all? What's going on?
Hey.
Shalom.
Shalom, Islam, peace, assalamu alaikum.
Islam, assalamu alaikum, Hotep.
Hotep, all right. Yes, sir, yes, sir. All right, this is Collective Minds Radio, y'all. We got a great show for y'all. We do have a special guest in the building as well. But before we get started, did y'all have any announcements? I guess we go to Rigel Starr first. You got any announcements?
No, I don't have any announcements. I feel like I did, but no, I don't have any announcements.
Okay.
All right.
Foster, you got any announcements?
Yeah, the first announcement is, just in case I missed it beforehand, rest in peace. Shout out to Winnie Mandela, a strong soldier for the liberation of African people on the continent.
Yes,
so she will be missed, and we need to. If you don't know Winnie Mandela, I recommend that you do some research on her, because she was a powerful woman, powerful sister. Other shout out is to ISUPK, Hebrew Israelites out of New York, Captain Chadazai and Captain Tazariak. We was on a radio show this past Thursday. And every time we have a discussion with them brothers, it's always an edifying event. You know,
that's right.
So we may not subscribe 100% to the same belief system or same doctrine, but we definitely can learn off of each other. And I really appreciate them brothers for real for the work that they do for our people. So shout out
Indeed.
To them, and hopefully we'll be going back on their radio show either the next week or the week after. We'll let you know when we get it all situated.
Okay. Indeed. Appreciate that. Appreciate it. Yeah, so I concur with everything you said. You know, rest in peace to rest in power to Winnie Mandela. She made the transition. And shout out, you know, to the IGBK brothers. So I'm just repeat what you said on that. And my quick announcement is congratulations to Black Panther. Once again, I think it's about to move into the top three grossing film of all times, behind Star Wars and Avatar. You know, so shout out to the cast, to the directors, Ryan Coogler, you know, Chadwick Boseman, Lupita, all the actors, and you know, that movie has really brought to light a lot of conversations, you know, as you know. And so just shout out to that whole movie enterprise franchise. It was a good look, and you know, hopefully they can keep bringing it home. So,
yeah, a lot
that's
of controversy, and that's what we need.
Yeah.
We need movies like that to make us think.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that means, you know, that means people went to go see it multiple times. That wasn't just a one-time thing when you do them type of numbers. You know what I'm saying? So people went to go see it multiple times. So shout out to that whole cast and crew. You know, melanated folks getting it in. And so without further ado, y'all, this is Collective Minds Radio. Today we are discussing police brutality. And we have a very special guest with us today. This gentleman is a civil rights attorney. He's represented a lot of families in the last few years here, most notably the Trayvon Martin family, Alicia Thomas family. He worked with the family of Michael Brown, Martin Lee Anderson, Tamir Rice, Corey Jones, Terrence Crutcher. Just a lot of people, you know, from our community have reached out to this particular attorney to help them, you know, with civil rights litigation and counsel. So we have in the building with us, joining Collective Minds to discuss police brutality is it systematic or is it just a few bad apples? We have with us Mr. Benjamin Crump.
Good evening.
Are you...
Thank y'all for having me, gentlemen.
Good evening, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for spending some time with us this evening. We do appreciate it. And we're going to stick with the format as far as Collective Minds format. We want to give the host a chance to give a quick summary of what they think as far as the question that we posed, and then we'll let you go in, sir. But thank you again for spending some evening with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, we will defer to the woman of the show, Ms. Rigel Starr. Now, do you think police brutality is systematic, or do you think it's just a few bad apples?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question because it seems to me like it's tangled. It does. I do believe that there's a system in place that allows it and upholds the few bad apples, or I don't even know if I want to say few, but the bad apples that we do have that implement the issues, and I think it's the system. So I would say that it's tangled. You know, I wouldn't separate the two, but I would say that they are both true and they work together. And that's all.
Indeed.
I can pass the mic.
Indeed, indeed. Now, my brother Mufasa Ra, what do you think as far as police brutality? Is it systematic or do we just have a few bad apples on the force?
Hey, first off, again, I want to thank Attorney Crump for joining us as well. And, yes, I have to say, in my opinion, it's systematic because these police officers in these past few cases that we've seen, to me, it seemed like they seek out these people and they edge them on. They try to, you know, lure these people and bait them into a confrontation. When we see this same thing happen with other races of people, they seem to be a little bit more lenient towards handling them. But when it comes to our people, you know, they want to get forceful with them. And like I say, lure them into a confrontation. So I would say it's systematic. Also, because when these cops do these things, they get away with it. You know, they get slaps on the hand and they get away with it. I haven't seen a cop yet get hit, get charged rightfully for their crimes when they kill an unarmed black person. So with that being said, I'm going to keep it short for now so our guests can go in because I know he's short on time. But I would say, yes, it's systematic.
Okay. And, yes, I would say I agree with that as well. I just want to make a real quick point before we get to our guests. I think it's definitely systematic, and I would even go as far as to say, and I want to choose my words very carefully, that there are actually no good cops. Now, what do I mean by that? When I say there's no good cops, I mean there are good people that I personally know that are cops. But once you join the force and you swear that oath and you get that blue wall of silence, you know, you're no longer a good cop. Because if there were good cops, they would be telling on the bad cops every day. So my favorite line is, you know, all the good cops have found other jobs. Because if you go in there and try to disrupt the system and try to, you know, point out the bad cops, systematically they're going to find a way to get rid of you. They either make your job hard or they'll just flat out fire you, you know, from the force. So, you know, I say the good cops have all found other jobs. And as far as it being systematic, it is truly systematic. Because when you try to disrupt the system, somehow they find a way to, you know, get the good cops out. And the bad cops continue to, continue to run and do their thing. So that's my particular stance. I'm going to keep it real short because we do want to bring in our special guest, Attorney Benjamin Crump, and we want to pose this question to him as well. Mr. Crump, now, do you think police brutality is systematic, or do you think there are just a few bad apples?
Well, again, let me say thank you to allow me to be with you all on Collective Mind. It's this kind of conscious conversation that is critical to our people being able to overcome this systematic legalization of discrimination that I think exists in and outside of the courtrooms. And I absolutely believe that systematic, with all the empirical data that we offer in courtrooms when we fight these cases on the civil side, because I'm a civil rights lawyer and I'm a civil lawyer, which means we don't get to control what happens in the criminal side if the police officer is charged or if the police officer is convicted. That is all left up to the elected district attorney or state attorney, but we go make the case for the wrongful death, and in doing so, we offer all these statistics and all this data that's overwhelming, that the police are systematically more inclined to shoot first and ask questions later when it's a black or brown person. And just to bring the point home, I just want to share with you all that the police are responsible for an average of 1,100 deaths per year. The police kill more people than in plane crashes. The police kill more people than foreign terrorists. The police kill more people than mass shooters. The police kill more people than Chicago gangs. More people die by police than the United States soldiers kill in action around the globe in 2017. More people died at the hands of police in 2017 than the number of black people who were lynched in the worst year of Jim Crow. And to the other brother's point, only 1% of officers were charged with a crime. That's charged with a crime. And less than 10% of those officers who were charged with a crime was convicted of a crime. And so that's why I say, it's the legalization of discrimination, because the majority of the people on a percentage basis that the police shoot and kill are minorities. And you have to ask yourself, why is it that Stephon Clark, who only has a cell phone, is shot at 20 times, and so many other unarmed black men like Philando Castile in Minneapolis, Laquan McDonald in Chicago, Walter Scott in North Charleston. These are people who had no weapon. The police knew they didn't have a weapon, but yet they shot and killed them, and they hadn't committed any crimes. There was an allegation maybe on Stephon Clark, but these other individuals, they knew had not committed any crime to speak of, but yet they chose to shoot them. And I haven't even gotten into Michael Brown and Tamir Rice and so many others, Alicia Thomas. So you look at that as opposed to this young white man in Florida who went into a school and shot 34 people, killing 17 of them. The police follow him for hours, but yet they don't shoot not one bullet at him. But yet, unarmed black people, they shoot and kill on numerous of occasions. You think about the young white man in Austin, Texas, who was bombing homes, killed multiple people. They follow him for hours. They don't shoot not one bullet, but an unarmed black man with a cell phone, they shoot at him 20 times. And then I have to remind you all what happened a couple of years ago when this young white boy named Dylan Roof went into the church in South Carolina and shot nine of the most innocent people you could ever find. I mean, the most innocent people. In fact, he even said that he felt bad about killing them because they were so nice to him during their prayer service. And so you think about, they didn't shoot Dylan Roof not one time, and in fact, took him to Burger King to get a burger and fries on his way to jail. And so why is it they get the benefit of the doubt, the benefit of consideration, the benefit of that, yet an unarmed black man, he is within seconds judged to be a criminal, nefarious, evil, and we got to take him down. But I think a Terrence Crutcher and Tulsa, Oklahoma, walking away with his hands up in broad daylight. Only crime, his car had broke down. Hadn't committed any crime. The helicopter overhead, you got three officers, four officers on the scene. The helicopter guy says, it looks like a bad dude. Didn't know
Terrence
Adam, but made that assessment. But you see over and over again, when it comes to minorities, that shoot first and ask questions later. And regardless of what the White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, this is not a local issue. This is a national issue. And I submit to you all, that is an epidemic. I'm going to Houston next week on another one where an unarmed black male in broad daylight was shot and killed. And the video is just graphic and it's sad because yet again, they could have done so many other things other than to kill the brother.
Yes, sir. Let me ask you this, Mr. Crump. Because when we look at a lot of these shootings, right, it seems that there are a lot of systems at play. Okay, we have the prosecutors, then we have grand juries in certain cases, and then also we have the media. And it seems like a lot of these cases are tried in the court of public opinion. So the media comes out immediately, and like you said, they start to criminalize these people, start to bring up family history, and then they also start to make a case for the officers saying, you know, they'll bring in quote-unquote law enforcement experts that'll say, well, you know, he had the right to do that, or that's a normal reaction for an officer, and so on and so forth. So my question to you is, because I look at this as all different arms part of the same system, right? So my question is, do you believe that we live in a system of white supremacy? And can you talk about the relationship between, you know, the prosecutors and police, and also how the media plays a role in all these police brutality cases?
Certainly. One of the things, and we have to always remember that when the Constitution was written, they wrote laws that said African-Americans, black people were three-fifths of a citizen. They wrote laws called the Fugitive Slave Act, which were the first police were slave hunters executing the Fugitive Slave Act. And so you have to remember that's the history of policing in America. And a lot of things the courts and the laws have legalized. I believe legalization and justification of discrimination. I don't think many things have changed from the Plessy versus Ferguson decision. Even though we want to believe we've made a lot of progress, in many ways, when you look at some of the rulings, especially as it relates to these police shootings, where all the officer has to say is, I felt in fear of my life, and he's automatically or she's automatically given a pass. And it's troubling because it's such a subjective thing that when you think about Bernard Katz, I don't know how many people have studied history of all these racist laws like Stand Your Ground, but the New York Supreme Court decided in that case that you can consider race as a factor in a self-defense claim if the person is black, that they may be more dangerous than a white person. And so your self-defense or your stand-your-ground claim is given more merit. So you have to remember all these things, and then you look at the fact these grand jury proceedings, I know I'm talking to conscious people. We see every day that people from our communities are charged with crimes with no evidence at all. I mean, it's an innuendo. It's you fill a description. And, in fact, I'm doing a television show called Evidence of Innocence about wrongfully incarcerated individuals who have been exonerated by clear and convincing evidence and DNA evidence that spent decades in prison, mostly black and Hispanic people, because the easiest thing to do in our criminal justice system is to convict the black or brown person. You don't have to have any evidence at all. So you see this happen over and over and over again, where the prosecutors have grand jury proceedings, and 99.9% of the time, they go back to the grand jury. The grand jury agrees that the person should be charged. And it makes sense, because in a grand jury proceeding, there's only one lawyer in the room, and that's the prosecutors. There's nobody
right.
else. There's no opposing side. And so you got regular average citizens listening to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor will decide, you know, whether to charge the person or not based on what they put forth to the citizens in the grand jury. And so they all do what the lawyer tells them to do. And so they get
right.
all these true bills of indictment, except when it comes to a police officer shooting a minority. And then you can reverse that statistic. Don't seem like they ever get to charge police officers with killing us. And so I believe that is systematic. I believe it's part of this whole legalized genocide, and it's the legalization and justification of discrimination. So I hope I answered your question, because I do think that a big part of it, even though I don't know if it's, you say it's flat out white supremacy, I do think the system is inherently discriminatory, and it doesn't matter the individuals. And you can change individuals in and out of the system. It's the system that is inherently discriminatory. So you're going to get the same results that you got the most black and brown people going into the prison system, and the black and brown people, when we're victims, nobody being held accountable. And I'll give you one more. When you want to talk about death row, we only have, black men only make up 7% of the population in America, at most 7%, maybe some say closer to 6%. But we
right.
make up 48% of the people on death row in America. 48%.
Right.
You say, how can that be? The biggest indicator as to who goes on death row is the identity of the victim. And you talk about Black Lives Matter. Well, if you are black and you kill a black person, you likely are going to get, you know, convicted of something, but you might even get life in prison. But you're not likely to get on death row. If you're African American and you kill a white person, those statistics go up to the 60% that you're going to get death row. And that's
Fact.
Just, if, yeah, it's, the data
Sure.
don't lie. You can't get away from that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And if you're just joining us, family, we are here building with civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump. We will get to the phone lines because we are a little short on time, but we want to give our co-host Mufasa Ra a chance to ask a question and get maybe a question or two from the phone lines if Mr. Crump is available. So just keep in mind, this is Collective Minds Radio. We are talking about police brutality. Give us a call. The number is 929-477-1697. Brother Mufasa Ra, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, sir. I want to touch into basically what you was just talking about, and ask you a two-part question.
Yes, sir.
First part is, when is it also adding to the problem that when these officers are charged, you know, it seems to me like they charge them with like first degree murder, or they try to hit them with some charge that they can't prove, and that's
mm-hmm.
another way that these officers get away. So I want to ask you, can you touch on that, and also touch on the major differences between the prosecution side and what you do on the civil side for the family?
Absolutely. Both excellent questions. I think when you look at Trayvon Martin's case, which was one of the first ones to really get a lot of attention in America, it became the number one news story in the world in 2012. You think about what the prosecutors did. They charged with this all or nothing mentality. You don't even see them charge us with crimes like that. They always have what they call lesser included charges. I think in many ways we have to understand that it is the prosecutor, the elected official, who let them get away with murder, and then we don't hold those prosecutors accountable. We should be having not only rallies, but voter registration drives right in front of the prosecutor's office every time they fail to charge or they fail to get a conviction when these officers are on video killing our people. I ain't talking about the ones that are close calls. I'm talking about the ones that are on video, like Alton Sterling and Philando Castile and Terrence Crutcher and so on and so forth. And so I think that we have to always remember that these prosecutors have a symbiotic relationship with police officers. They work with them every building up their credibility as they are putting people, especially brown and black people, in jail on a systematic and continuous basis. And so then it's a whole different experience where now they having to prosecute their friends who they have worked with over and over again. And I also thought, when you look at that Trayvon Martin's case, it was like a fish out of water experience when you saw them, instead of trying to prosecute and put a young black boy in jail versus defending the honor and the dignity of his life. It's like they didn't even know how to do it properly. And that's one of the things we have to deal with, and we have to make sure prosecutors give us due process of the law too. And when they don't, we have to hold them accountable. You know, I get a lot of flack, and it's one of those things. I think about my personal hero, Thurgood Marshall, and the flack that he got. But we get a lot of flack when we take on these cases and we make them high visible cases where everybody know their name and so forth. And then when the prosecutor doesn't do their job, they say, "Oh, Crump, you lost the case." And I just take it with a grain of salt. I say, they need to go back to high school and study civics. I'm a private lawyer. I'm a private citizen. I have no power to convict or charge anybody with a crime. It's you who need to do your job if you live in the community and make sure they get the conviction. And so what ends up happening, you start making people who want to stand up and say that our lives matter and don't let them get swept under the rug. They're saying, well, I don't want to have to take all the scrutiny and everything because the prosecutor's failure. I'd just rather go over here and not be bothered with it anymore. But thank God some of us aren't built that way, and we understand it's not a popularity contest. We're actually fighting to bring attention to the lives of the Stephon Clarks, the Tamir Rices, the Trayvon Martins. You know, 277 people have been killed by police this year. And I think many people don't know anybody's name except Stephon Clark because the work we've been doing to raise the visibility of them. And so it's one of those things, you see it as a double-edged sword. You're raising the visibility, but when you look at the prosecutor in Sacramento, California, she has a history of coddling the police and protecting the police. There was a case called Joseph Mann, which was far worse than many of these cases I've ever seen. They executed this brother. Four police officers in broad daylight. I mean, literally had a firing squad on him. And she didn't even prosecute them. And so it's one of those things. She is the issue. She's a Republican prosecutor who is, without saying it, with her words but with her actions, telling the police it's okay to kill black and brown people. You're not going to go to prison. But yet we don't attack her. And so first we got to start attacking the right people.
Right. This is true. And, yes, sir, thank you. And hopefully you got time for a call. We want to get a chip. We can get a call in. Mr.
Yes,
Crump.
Sir. Yes, sir. Okay. My answers were so long. I'll definitely hold on. I appreciate you all having this conversation.
We appreciate you, sir. We appreciate it. And thanks for clearing that up as far as the side as you on, because a lot of people do think that you're in charge of making sure these people get convicted, but it's not you. It is the prosecutors. job to do that. So, okay, right to start, you want to go to the phone line.
Okay, let's start with caller 314-381. Caller over there, you mind saying your name? Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I have no question on this topic. I'll wait till the next one.
Okay.
All right,
okay,
thank you for listening in. Thank you.
I will say this while we wait for another caller. One of the things we do, we do the wrongful death cases. We bring 1983 civil rights cases against police officers for excessive force and wrongful death. And in that there, we have always prevailed. We always win the family monetary damages and so forth. And even though that don't bring their family, their loved ones back, it in some way gives them some sense of justice. Not, they don't get full justice, because if they had full justice, the person would have been convicted and went to prison, and it would be a deterrent to the next officer who's going to shoot first and ask questions later. But one of the things I used to believe this, y'all. I used to believe that America is a capitalistic society, and so if we made them have to pay millions of dollars every time they shot one of us in the back, that there will be less black men shot in the back. But I have to admit, I was wrong, because we collect millions of dollars on all these cases, but it's not stopping them from doing it. I think the only way we can stop them from doing it is they got to go to prison. They got to know their life is going to be substantially affected if they kill us. Because like the brother said earlier, they get the slap on the wrist. They are... to move to another police department, and it's business as usual.
Indeed, yes, sir. Now, I do want to ask you on the flip side, because we talked about Philando Castile. Now, there's a case with a black officer named Mohammed Noor, who is being charged with shooting a white female. I want to just get your opinion on that case, and do you think he'll be convicted?
Unfortunately, I think he will be convicted. I think race matters in America. And the real question is, where is the police union? These police unions on all these cases, no matter how clear they are, they come out and defend the police. But here, they just let this brother be out on an island by himself. Ain't nobody trying to defend him. So that shows you the hypocrisy of the police union, as well as when you think of the NRA. In Philando Castile case, where was the NRA for Philando Castile? He was a licensed, registered gun owner, but they didn't come and champion his rights. Corey Jones, the same thing, who we represent, who the undercover police officer shot and killed him. He had no idea who this guy was as an undercover police officer pulling out a gun and telling him to drop his weapon, never identifying himself as a police, and being in a white cargo band with jeans, a T-shirt, and a baseball cap at 3 in the morning, and he just pull up on you and pull out his gun. But the NRA is silent. They crickets when it comes to black people having their rights to bear arms, like the Second Amendment that they so love. They always talk about it, but then when it says it seems to be, well, that's not that important.
Right, exactly. Yes, sir. Thank you. So if you're just joining us, we are talking with Mr. Benjamin Crump, and this is Collective Minds Radio. We appreciate all the callers and everyone calling in. I did want to ask you this. Now, in regards to the Stephen Clark case, because it seems like the police officers will probably not get convicted. So as as a civil attorney, what is your process and what are your steps, knowing that these officers will probably not get convicted? How do you move forward?
Absolutely. Well, we, as you may have seen in the news, we started our own independent investigation and had our own independent autopsy performed by Dr. Bennett Amalu, who was the first doctor to discover CTEs in the NFL concussion cases. He was portrayed by Will Smith in the movie Concussion. And so in that scenario, what we're doing is bringing a civil wrongful death case on behalf of his family, especially his two sons. And I feel we would be very successful in the civil side of it, because there is no way they can justify, when you look at that video, shooting 20 times at a person who had no gun, he had no weapon. They offered him no warning. They offered him no identification of who they were. And after they executed him, in his grandma's backyard, after they shot him all those times, they then offered him no humanity. They waited 6 minutes as he lay down on the ground before they approached him to render any kind of assistance. And we got experts looking at the video. I don't think they rendered him assistance then. I think they put him in handcuffs. And so Dr. Malu, his autopsy findings were just shocking, because they had said the reason they had to shoot Stephon Clark was because he was coming at them. They opened fire when he was coming at them. But the autopsy report found that he had 8 shots to his body, 7 of them from the back and 1 in his leg, and none of the bullets came from the front part of his body. All of them came from the back. And that was just troubling on so many levels, because it continued the distrust in the Sacramento community and all over America. Because the first, after they shot him, the next morning they told the community that the reason they had to do this was because he had a gun. Well, they knew that was a lie right then, because time they counted on his body, they knew it was a cell phone and not a gun. But they were trying to, I believe, sweep it under the rug. And then they had to walk that back the next day, because they knew the helicopter video and the body cameras were going to show he had no gun. And then they said, oh, he had a crowbar, a tool bar, and that's why we had to shoot him 20 times in his grandmother's backyard. Then they had to walk that back. And then finally, the third time, they came clean and said, well, he was unarmed. All he had was a cell phone. Well, those are some of the reasons why I feel we're going to be very successful, as well as the fact that they muted their microphones, as well as to know if it was Stephon Clark who was committing the crime, because the caller said he could not identify the individual who was allegedly breaking in his car. And so on an accusation, we end the conversation where we started, on an accusation that a black man committed a crime, they shoot at him 20 times, with factual confirmation, young white boy shot and killed 17 people, they don't shoot him. Factual confirmation in Austin, white boy killed 3 people, they don't shoot and kill him. Confirmation, Dylan Roof killed 9 people, they don't shoot and kill him. But black men with cell phones, black men and all, like Terrence Crutcher, and the one that I got coming up in Houston, Danny Ray Thomas, who was having a mental episode, walking down the street with his pants down in broad daylight, and they shoot and kill him when it was clear he had no weapon. We all don't get the benefit of the doubt and benefit of consideration. So that's why I conclude with saying, it is systematic, and it is a national epidemic.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brother, this is Mufasa again. I got another question for you. On the civil side, and I don't know if you can speak on this or not, I got 2 questions, but I'm going to start with this one. You say if you can speak on it, I'm not sure. But what is the determining factors in the amounts that these families receive on the civil side, determines that the amount, you know, is it depending on the type of crime? Go ahead.
Well, normally it's what the jury evaluates the value of their life. They will look at, you know, his history, whether he had any criminal history, whether he had a job, all these things they would look at. Whether they were children involved, whether his parents were dependent on him for assistance. They'll look at many factors. But I think one of the things that is also, I try to put in the minds of the jury, and why I think we've been so successful, is the fact that there's a punitive element they escaped any criminal liability, and so the city, somebody should have to pay for the life of this unarmed black person who, but for these police bullets were, that God has for their lives. And so that becomes a big factor of it. I will say this, though. The Supreme Court is making it harder and harder to recover on police shootings. They have this thing called qualified immunity. And that is where they give the police a certain cloak of immunity that you don't even get to go to trial court says that the police didn't violate any policy or any procedures. I mean, you can see it no matter how wrong it was. They say you don't get a right to trial by jury. And we just saw that this past week by the United States Supreme Court. A black woman was shot 4 times at the University of Arizona, and she was having a mental episode. Her roommate called the police on her. They said they had to shoot her, even though the woman didn't have any weapon, anything that they were certain of. They just knew she was behind a corner. And, again, they shot first and asked questions later. And the United States Supreme Court ruled that she was not entitled to anything from a jury. She wasn't even entitled to have a trial by jury. Now, you're talking about hypocrisy and a miscarriage of justice. The whole thing that's supposed to separate America from the other countries in the world, supposed to make us this great beacon of hope and justice, is because no matter what, you have a trial by jury, but when it comes to police shootings, they're starting to take that away from us. And so we now more than ever got to get ready. This 45th president of ours is putting forth a lot of federal judges who think like them, and they make us jump through 100 hoops just to get a trial by jury. I mean, can you imagine your daughter shot 4 times by the police and you can't even get a trial?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And do these families, do they make them, like, say once it's settled, will they pay them out lump, or do a lot of times this stuff still have to wait, you know, months or years before families can even receive any benefits from a settlement?
It depends. It depends on whether it's a state claim or federal claim. Federal claims, they have to pay immediately. State claims oftentimes have a process that you have to go through called a claims bill, where you have to have the entire legislature of that state vote to pay you the award that's greater than what they call the state cap. Normally they would cap how much a state would have to pay. In Florida, it's $400,000. And anytime the state of Florida would have to pay over $400,000, you have to get a special bill through the legislature, which is becoming more and more challenging since you have these Republican-controlled legislatures. So you may have to wait a year to up to 5 years before you can even get the verdict that the jury awarded you paid. And so like I said, it is legalization of discrimination. And the only thing that gives me hope is the young people, like in Sacramento, who just are refusing to let there be any peace unless they address what happened to Stephon Clark. Because if we're well-behaved victims, then that's exactly how they'll treat us. They'll just keep going on and say they're not going to do anything. But it's the young people who refuse to be silent, and thank God for them, because, you know, they understand what Martin Luther King said when they try to justify these killings and this injustice and this discrimination. Dr. King said in his letter from the Birmingham jail, just because it's legal, that don't make it right. Everything Hitler did to the Jews in Germany was legal, but that didn't make it right. Slavery was legal. That didn't make it right. Segregation was legal. That didn't make it right. And so we have to remind people, just because these secret grand jury proceedings come back and just do something completely outrageous, even though we saw videotape, even though they kick us out of court on qualified immunity, which is a farce, we have to remember, just because they're saying it's legal, that don't make it right. There's a high authority, there's a collective mind that says that's not appropriate, and we got to continue to raise our voices no matter how much they try to silence us and attack us. And you know, the FBI doing all kind of things to identify young Black Lives Matter people and civil rights leaders and lawyers as criminals or unpatriotic or un-American. We got to continue to raise our voices no matter what, y'all, because this is about our children. It was Tamir Rice, 12 years old, last year in Cleveland. If you don't something about it, it could be your child. And don't get upset if you didn't stand up for Tamir Rice and it's your child next year.
You know, Attorney Crump, I got one final one before we go. I know we got a caller want to ask you something, but I'll be real quick.
Okay, I'm going to have to. Okay, I got about 5 more minutes, then I got to jump off. Okay.
Okay, because you kind of touched into it. Well, you might like you just read my mind. I was going to ask you, like, what do you think we can do? what do you think we can do to, you know, to help stop these things from happening? You know, we were trying to discuss it amongst ourselves yesterday, you know, tossing it around because we don't really see an answer. So what do you think can be done?
As it relates to the police or as it relates to the laws?
Both.
Both, yeah.
Well,
both.
Let me try to answer as quickly as I can. I think, number one, as it relates to the police, they if you believe they're not white supremacists and they're not KKK people disguised as police officers with guns and badges to hunt us down, and I don't want to believe that, then it's about training and implicit bias training. Why do you feel that Black people are more dangerous than white people when the statistics say that you're more likely to be killed by a white person than a Black person? Because what we know, the statistics tell us, the data tell us, if we kill a white person, we on death row. So we're more inclined to go kill one of our own because they know, we know they ain't going to put us on death row. And, you know, when we were doing Ferguson and Michael Brown, the white kids from Stanford did this thing called Criming While White, hashtag Criming While White, because, you know, the whole thing was that Blacks, we could, you know, move the wrong way, and then they'll come after us. But, you know, white kids could spit on police, kick police, hit police, point guns at police and everything, and they still wouldn't shoot them. But when it came to us, man, we better keep our hands on the steering wheel. We better not make no sudden moves, all that stuff. And so that's what was going on. And then when we think about the prosecutors, we just got to call them out. You got to keep a report card, and you got to scream it from the mountaintop. This prosecutor is sending your children to prison, killing your children softly by sending them to prison. But when they kill your children, they don't do anything else. We got to get them out of office. We got to go find qualified prosecutors. And they ain't got to look like us. Hopefully we can find some minority prosecutors, Black and Hispanic, but people who just are fair, who want to give equal justice versus these prosecutors who are really parading as police lawyers. They don't represent the community's interest. They just say, we're going to make sure the police get off. And that's what we can't have. We got to call them out. And then the other thing as it relates to the Supreme Court, you know, it's just Graham v. Conn is just a bad case law, in my opinion, because what it says is all the police officers got to do is say, I felt in fear of my life, and 9 times out of 10, they get in the pass. Those are the magic 3 words. I felt threat, and I felt in fear. So that justifies you shooting my brother in the back.
Indeed, indeed. Now, we do know you got to go. Now, do you have time for one more question? We have a call in the queue.
We got to be real quick, and I apologize.
One more. Okay, no problem. We appreciate the time this evening. Roger Starr, can you get the caller?
Okay, we'll go with caller number 314-616. Caller, are you
there?
State your name. Do you have a question?
Yes. Yes, please forgive me if I repeat anything that's already been said, because I just got on. But my question to Attorney Crump is, when we look at your track record, we notice that you have not won any victories over these police brutality killings. At what point are we going to take this thing to international law to prove that our rights as humans are being
to the
are being violated?
To the world's court. I think that's a great point. That but they have no authority over American courts, so they issued opinions and Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin, all those things, saying that it was systematic excessive force and murder in Trayvon's case. But remember, and you may not have heard, I'm not the prosecutor. People mistakenly say, "Well, Crump, you lost the case." Every case I was on, I won. All we can do is get monetary damages for the family. That's all a private citizen can do. The only
The question I ask you is what's more important, monetary damage or absolutely proven that this thing has been violated? Because it seems to me, based on the track record, that you know, monetary damage has become more important than our civil rights.
Well, let me make sure you understand it. You know, people who can put people in jail is the government. That's the law. High school civics teaches us about the Constitution. Private people can't put people in jail. I'm a private lawyer. The family hires me to bring a wrongful death suit. And a lot of my colleagues say, why do you even get involved in the criminal aspects of trying to get a prosecution? That just make people say, Crump lost the case. Well, the thing is, the truth of the matter is, I wish I was designed where I didn't care, and I said, I don't care when they go to jail. Now, I did my job. I got the family a lot of money for the wrongful death, because that's what the law said, but I care. And so I say, no, it's not enough just to give us money. The police need to go to jail so they can deter people from doing this in the future. And what happens is people come after the people who are trying to help, versus going after the people who continue to really kill our children and let it get swept under the rug, which is the elected DAs and the elected prosecutors. The World Court, we did that on both levels, on Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin. We got opinions, written opinions from the World Court. We went to Switzerland both times. But as it relates to the police going to jail, that's on the DA. We did everything that we could do. We won them, I mean, overwhelmingly. We got millions of dollars for the family. We got opinions from the World Court. But people say, hold on, well, because the police didn't go to jail, you lost the case. Thurgood Marshall dealt with this a lot, too. So I get it, and I try not to ever, you know, you take it for a grain of salt. You chose to make this case a spotlight case because, like I said, and you weren't listening earlier, 277 people have been killed this year in America by police. The only one most people know is Stephon Clark, because we've made it a high-profile case. We're going to win the civil suit again. We'll probably get an opinion from the World Court. The prosecutor is probably not going to prosecute him, and people are going to say, Crump, you lost the case again. And I don't even deal with that anymore, because it's not about popularity. It's not about vanity. It's about trying to fight for the rights of our people and let people know that this young black guy was killed, and he shouldn't have been killed. And we're not going to let you sweep it under the rug. And I look in the mirror every day, and I believe that I wish more people would, instead of criticize, and say, well, what can we do to change the scenario? It's not on one man to do that. It's not on one person to do that. It is all on us collectively to do that.
That is a fact, and we thank you, truly thank you, Mr. Crump. And we did touch on that earlier, caller, but if you stay tuned, I'll probably touch on that a little bit later in the conversation. But I know Mr. Crump is short on time. We thank you, and we want to give you the last word. If you want to share anything or let us know what you have coming up, and we'll give you the last word, sir.
Well, all I can say is thank you all, Collective Mind, for having these conscious conversations. In the end, what we really have to do is make sure our children are more intelligent than their oppressors. And this is what this is about. There are a lot of crab in the bucket brothers who don't get it, but it's never about turning down black people. It's about trying to uplift us. And even if we make mistakes, what you still got to do is say, hold on, let's figure out how not to make the mistakes again in the future. Because
indeed,
if our children are not more intelligent than the oppressors, then the oppression continues, brothers and sisters.
Indeed, indeed. That was well said. And again, we truly thank you, Collective Minds Radio. We thank you. We have Attorney Benjamin Crump, He has been doing a lot of work in the community, and he did clear up a lot of things. He is not the prosecutor in charge of the officers going to jail. That is up to the prosecutor, who I believe works for the state or the city. She works for the government to prosecute these people, and they're not doing their job. He's in charge of the civil matter, basically getting some type of redress for these families, you see. So that's where we're at. Once again, thank you, Mr. Crump. Did my co-host have
thank
any
you.
Parting words for Mr.
Yeah,
Crump?
Keep,
thank you.
Hey, you keep fighting, brother.
Hey, appreciate y'all. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing, man. It's critical for our people's survival. God bless.
Yes, sir. God
thanks,
bless.
Thanks,
peace.
Mr. Crump.
Okay, bye-bye.
Peace. All right. All right. Yes, yes. That was a great. I've learned a lot, and I hope we cleared up a lot, you know, with the listeners and with the family. Once again, just to reiterate, you know, Mr. Crump, because that is a misconception I've been hearing out there. You know, people be like, well, he lost all these cases, and these people are not going to jail. Every case he had, nobody's going to jail. But there's different sides to the law. You have the civil side, then you have the criminal side. And the prosecutor who works for the state, that's why they say the prosecutor is basically in bed with the police. You know, the most of the time, the prosecutors are friends with the police, friends with the chief, and things like that, and they're in bed with the police. So they're not typically going to prosecute their own, as we see, especially when it comes to dealing, you know, with a black person being shot. So the prosecutor is in charge of making sure that these race soldiers, police officers go to jail. They're not doing their job. Mr. Benjamin Crump works with the family, as he said, to bring light to the case, make it high profile, get it in the media, and get things going. Therefore, they can get a civil suit and get some type of monetary relief because, I mean, if the police are not going to go to jail, which is the ultimate form of justice, that's what we truly want, I believe. You know, as a people, we want these police to be held accountable. You see what I'm saying? At the end of the day, they need to be held accountable for their actions. And the problem is they're not being. So the next step would be at least give the family some type of, you know, monetary relief, which we know that can never, you know, a life is priceless, you know. So that can never replace a loved one, but at least they could, you know, improve their quality of life based on the system we live in, which is capitalism, by getting some more money, you know, if that makes sense. But, yeah, Mufasa, Ride the Story, y'all want to add on?
Well, I think he did a good job because it was good for him to come on and clear those things up because that's
exactly
one of the famous questions that you would hear anytime,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I would hear anyway, anytime, you know, you would hear Mr. Crump being involved. They, the concern was that he was the one that was, you know, was the one responsible for whether or not the case went how the public wanted it as far as I was concerned and how it actually went. So it was good he won.
Right.
I appreciate him coming to kind of clear that up. But it was just, it's interesting, though, because it's still like Mufasa said, like, still, what do we do? You know, we know that once
right.
it happened, you know what to do then, but how can we prevent these things, you know?
Well, that's why, you know, like we talked about last week or the week before, you know, the code is just to comply. Like, you know, because we are, in my opinion, in a system of racism, white supremacy. So we are behind enemy lines, and we just have to comply. Now, after they do their dirt and all that, basically it's out of our hands because it's in their system. You dig what I'm saying? Once they commit the crime and kill one of us unlawfully that's unarmed and not really doing nothing, at that point, it's out of our hands. So what we need to do is prevent it even going that far, you know, in dealings with them, again, comply. You know, we need to be on point. We need to have all of our stuff in order. I know, you know, with a lot of black people, we may have, you know, some warrants for tickets and this and that. And, you know, we've all been there with place bad and all type of things that go on within our community based on lack of resources. But none of this, you know, none of this should make us fear for our life. You know what I'm saying? We should just be a citation and we should be moving on. But that's why I say within the system we need to make sure we got everything in order. That way we don't give them a reason to, you know, to kill us. Because we know that this is what they want to do. This is what they've been trained to do, so to speak. And we don't want to give them that option. So we want to make sure that we have everything in order and on point so it doesn't escalate to them having to, you know, pull out their gun or shoot us or anything like that. That's why I say I'm trying to vibrate on a level to where I don't even have to deal with the police. It's been over 10 years that I haven't even been pulled over, let alone call the police or anything. So, you know, if we can get to a point where we don't even have to deal with them on any level, you see, that would be ideal.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Where we just don't even have to deal with them, don't have to call them. And if we do get pulled over, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, like, well, you only have to go that far. Yes, no, here's my ticket. You know what I'm saying? Say as least as possible. Ask them questions. You know, you should also know your rights. As far as, you know, search and seizure, you do have rights in certain situations. You know, so we just have to be on point and be a lot more wise and understand the situation that we're in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so.
try not to get too emotional about it because, like,
right.
Say, for instance, the one technique I use to, I don't even give them eye contact. If I'm riding past the police, I don't even look at them. I just drive I'm driving. You know?
Yeah, I
so
do drive. I
think that's the technique. And also,
yeah.
Even if you're not saying that that's going to absolutely make them not pull you over, but I think it helps. And because it's less interaction. And if you were to get pulled over, and if you ask a question and you already notice that they're ignorant, just forget it. Just go ahead and just take the ticket and just deal with it another way. Over to say, okay, just don't
right.
interact. Like you said, try not to interact as least as possible. But since we do have the right to ask, and if you want to ask, try that. But if you see that he's ignorant, don't get baited in like Mufasa said. Just let him respond
right.
in a smart way. That's your cue. You know he ignorant, and just go ahead, take the ticket, and then pursue the issue in another you know outside of that situation.
Exactly. And because that's the thing, once it escalates and once they, you know, beat you, put their hands on you, pistol with you, whatever, it's out of your hands. 9 times out of 10, the courts are going to side with the police. You know, so once they violate you, it's pretty much, I mean, there is no recourse because what we're dealing with is a system that doesn't care about black people, period. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but that's what we're dealing with. Yeah, go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
I mean, y'all said it so well. I really just, I ain't got too much to say. Y'all put the nail in the, you know, in the coffin. But I will say, you know, because we had a private conversation last night when we was going over a couple of videos and incidents. I want to add out there to people is a lot of these cops, when they get trained, you know, they get brainwashed by watching these videos of, you know, of cop killings, of civilians shooting police officers. So you got a lot of these cops. We got the ones that are just outright racist and looking for a reason to shoot somebody. But you also got some that have been brainwashed to be scary. You know, to be in fear. So they already going out there brainwashed and trained that, hey, at the end of the day, I got to get home safe. My life is more important than the people who I'm supposed to be serving and protecting. So they see these videos and these cop killings. And these guys hit the street and they paranoid. They nervous. So a lot of them, they'll go to the gun first because they scary. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why... As civilians, we have to try to be aware of this, that of what we're dealing with, and know how to deal with these officers so we can do our best to try to get home safe. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Something happens to you, you know, your family have to suffer that loss. So I try my best, like Brother Kev said earlier, and Rigel, that I try my best not to have any run-ins with them at all, period. You know what I'm saying? But if I do, I do everything they ask. I try to comply, I try to speak calmly, and I try not to lose my composure because I know that my life is the one that's in jeopardy. And just like Brother Kev said, once they gun me down and take me out, it's going to take, I don't know what type of prosecutor is going to try this case. Nine times out of ten, this fool going to get off. You know what I'm saying?
Nine and a half times out of ten.
Right. 11 times out of ten, right.
So we got to start training each other up, y'all. And I also add this. If you have a loved one that has mental issues, your family members who have mental issues, because some of us are out here and we don't, you know, if your family is mentally challenged, they may not know how to deal with an officer. They may fly off the handle, you know, because they're not in control of their emotions. So you want to be careful and watchful over your family members, friends and family members who have mental issues as well, you know, because we don't want
to be tired of
losing. We're tired of losing our loved ones senselessly to the violence of police. You know, we already know black people, we're dealing with, you know, stuff that's going in our neighborhoods of us committing crimes, just things that happen in general. But when it comes to a police officer, we are supposed to be looking at them as someone that protects and serves our community. So for me, it's not that I don't trip off, like, you know, the so-called quote unquote black on black crime. But when a police officer does it to someone, to me, it's triple times is worse. Because your job is conserving. You shouldn't be gunning down civilians. I'm going to get tongue tied on that word, y'all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know, it's shameful. It's shameful that these officers are doing this to their citizens.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you brought up some good points. And we're going to get to the phone lines, too, in a second for somebody want to speak. But I want to make a point just to piggyback or veggie back off what Mufasa just said about if you have family with mental issues. That also goes for us teaching our kids as well, you know, because that's what it's about. That's who's growing up. We need to inform them and don't lie to them. We need to inform them exactly what type of system we're living in. And just teach them to comply with the police. You don't have the same luxury as everybody else to be getting emotional and throwing a fit because we're in a different type of system. We live in a different type of America. You see what I'm saying? As black people. So it's important that we teach our kids how to engage if they get pulled over, you know, if they have to interact with the police, how they should behave and how they should act. We need to put them up on game, that way it can save their life and we won't be having these tragic situations. So that was a good point that Mufasa brought, and he just made me think about we need to share this information, you know, with our kids as well. So right to start, did you want to check the phone lines? Any more collective minds want to speak?
Okay, let's take caller 314-381. Caller, are you there? You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I got a comment. You know, I heard Mr. Attorney Crump, I think it is.
Yes,
but you still have to get back to you still have to get to the reality that these municipalities, the people in these municipalities, are supposed to control their police department. Because they are employees. And people need to. And see, one thing, you know, you look at these different incidents that goes on around the country, and then someone, say in Georgia, is asking, making reference to what happened in California, what happened in Chicago, or what happened in of North Carolina, the reality is that those, as I just mentioned, are three different places. And there's no blanket definition for the use of deadly force at the federal level. Deadly force use is curtailed at the state level. And how those local municipalities, the chiefs of those municipalities, look at their law and come up with rules and regulations is how the members of his department are taught to respond. I mean, do you kind of understand what I'm trying to say? State of Missouri has deadly force use that applies to the state of Missouri. Now, it does not get into the Pacifics. No law gets into the Pacifics. It's how a department head reads that law. Now, you as a citizen, you dispute how it is used by taking it to court. And the courts will decide whether or not the individuals that did what they done, as I said, in these cases, used force, was the force within the confines of either a previous court ruling, like Heller versus Tennessee, or these original state statute itself. You know, in Ferguson, I put out a white paper, and if you'd like to have a copy of it, I sent that white paper clean across the tree, every municipality, person that was running. I gave a copy to the Ferguson Commission. And some of the things that I had in that white paper I'm seeing, have seen, and observed become center focus in many discussions and many different acts. Steve Springer was on Demetrius Johnson's show this morning, and he made note that St. Louis County is getting ready to have their police officers to take on body cameras. I had that in the white paper. I also went to Jeff City and testified on behalf of Jamila Nashi on why body cameras was needed. And another thing I had in the white paper that Steve Springer said, he said that they're going to hire more police officers. And he believes that police in a community should reflect the community that they're serving. What did that mean? If you got a community that's 90% black, then what he's saying is that there should be black police officers on that police department. And I guess he's talking about St. Louis County, so he's going to have, they've got county serving some of these municipalities, they're going to have to hire more black police officers so that they will look like the community that they're serving. That's another point that I had.
Right. That is an issue. I want to respond real quick just to a couple of things that you said. Now, as far as the body cams, see, my thing is the body cams don't help, because how many body cams have we seen? And it basically is just, we get to watch the killing live on TV. You know, it's just, we just get to watch it. But eventually the officers still get off. Just for instance, in this Stephon Clark case in Sacramento, they had body cams. Alton Sterling had, the police officer in the Alton Sterling case had body cams. Philando Castile. So the body cams, really, I look at it as just mental trauma so they can just play the lynchings over and over. Number two, I think is how the law is written as far as it being vague. When a police officer kills somebody, you know, they have certain procedures and the way the law is written, but I don't know the specifics. But I would say one thing implemented in there would be, if you discharge your weapon and you fatally harm someone, you should not be on paid leave, period. You should be on unpaid leave, you know, and have to sit out into further investigation. But these police officers are committing fatalities and killing people, and they're still on paid leave while the investigation is going on. So that's one small minor thing.
That's,
you know,
why
that I would add.
That's the municipality who is accepting that stipulation from the police union. Municipality don't have to do that, to my knowledge. Also, body cameras do work. In Ferguson, where you had that guy that turned around and shot them two cops after they tried to question him, and I think they even tried to tase him in a struggle pursuit, and he pulled away and started walking away from it. Then he pulled out a gun and turned around and shot two police officers in Bell Fountain. So body cameras do work. And
right, so you're saying they work for the police officers or for the civilians?
They work for both.
I don't see them working for the civilians, but they still,
well, yeah,
the police still get off. So,
well, they work for both, because you had a case downtown St. Louis where a police officer went around and told all the other police, she came over to the car and told the cruiser and said, you are green. She said, hold up, y'all. We green here. We don't want that. And she turned the cameras off. So, yes, it does work in both ways. That's what it should be designed to do. But what works more better is that citizens in those communities form their police commissions. The police commission is what sets the policy on how the employee behaves.
That's the way it should be.
So if they behave outside of those policies, then guess what? They are in the wrong.
Right, but the way the law is written today, they're not behaving outside of the policy, because like Mr. Crump said, all they have to do is say, I feared for my life, and then you're good.
Well, you can set the stipulations on what that means. If you fear for your life, retreat and call for backup. Now you got two opinions.
Right.
See, here's the thing. Don't think that you don't have the ability to control what goes on that you are paying for. You pay for this. You the citizens. You the one paying for it. Here's another point. Why don't you have your police officer carry their own liability insurance? I had that in the white paper. That way, just like your automobile insurance, if you have many claims against it, your insurance company is not going to want to carry you. Why does this, like, Crump is looking for a settlement from who? The settlement is going to come from the community. It ain't coming from the policeman. It ain't coming from the police union. So some of these communities, the people is having to pay twice. They're paying the wages and salary, and then they turn around having to pay these settlements.
Right. But I mean, I think that's how it should be, right? Because they're liable. If it's a government entity that's creating a violation, then they should have to pay them.
He's saying the officers should have to be held liable as well, so that we.
You know what happened to Lucy? You remember East St. Louis,
right?
When
that
guy got beat up in the jail and he went to court, the court awarded him the damn city hall. So how in the heck those people gonna pay that?
Right. I mean,
you got a pencil. Write my email down. Tell me when you're ready, and I'll send you a copy of this white paper.
Okay, yeah, I would love to have it. I think I may have your email, but what is it? I'll take it.
It's LC Steel, LCSTEEL at Mindspring, MindSpring.com. I sent copies of that to representatives around the country, people that were running for office. I didn't send none to the NAACP.
Okay, hold on real quick. Okay, I just want to get the website or the email. You say lcsteelmindsteering.com?
No, at Mindspring. Like
at
springs
Mindspring,
in your car,
okay.
And mind in your head. MindSpring.com. lcsteel at Mindspring.com.
Is that steel with an E at the end? Steel with an E?
STEEL.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay, I got it.
Let me ask you a quick question, brother, because I do like – I was always a big proponent of the one with the police.
Mufasa, you kind of went out on us. Mufasa, you went out on us, brother. Repeat your question.
Hang on there. Hang on. All right, can y'all hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I wanted to ask the brother because I was saying that I'm a big I'm big on that police, that the police should mirror the community. And I wanted to ask the caller, what more do we need to do, or what is it going to take to really push that into law here in Missouri?
Well,
to get that to happen?
It's not a law for the state. It's a community thing. It's how the community runs that operation. Just like the city of St. Louis. It not only should be in the police department, it should be in the fire department, city hall, public works, and school district. City of St. Louis had a policy that for every white firefighter, they had to hire a black firefighter until, and I forget what the term is, until that ratio was satisfied. And that's what you should do. You pay the taxes. Your kids should have the opportunity to work in the community. They're in the Northeast Fire District. They're on Natural Bridge, across the street from the McDonald's, just east of Lucas and Hunt. You had some white firefighters that live on the Missouri-Arkansas border working out of that district. God damn. I don't know no blacks that's working down from St. Louis that's working down there.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. That's something that the community need to get pushed on the ballot. What makes
No, you don't have to put it on the ballot. You just put it into effect. That's all you do.
But then how do we
hire
it in
local.
Effect? Yeah, how do we do it if it's the local authorities that's doing the hiring process? That's what I'm getting at.
Because you are the local authority. Take the have a central location for applicants to deposit their application for jobs, and you take the hiring out of the hands of the chiefs of police and the fire chief, because they're going to use what? Nepotism.
Right, right. Remember we had that issue with the St. Louis Fire Department here back in the day when people were applying and they were going through the test. It was a lot of nepotism. It was a lot of racial discrimination that they found out. So a lot of these things do need to be addressed as far as us applying for these jobs. Now, also, too, as far as the black community, we have to change our mindset of the – well, I'm not going to say we have to change our mindset, but our mindset of the police department in particular is – a hostile relationship. You know, growing up in the inner city, you're always taught and you're always seeing the police as basically occupiers of your community. So for you to want to be participating in that job is like you're going against your friends and you know family and all these other type of things that come along with the stigma of being a police officer. So that's
why
a lot of people may be hesitant to apply from the black community.
Let me tell you some more things. You know, Sherman George and the black firefighters have a program where they tutor and mentor black applicants for their job and get them acclimated to what they possibly see on the test. I tried to get the emergency medical technician license certification in the Normie High School so that when kids graduate, they will already have that, which is a prerequisite for becoming a firefighter. You know, years back in the late 90s, you had this article on how firefighting districts wasn't hiring blacks. And,
It was
looking at people out in Spanish Lake. They would scratch key into some black person's car, the N-word. And one chief say, "We ain't hiring niggas." And, you know, that's you got to break that stuff up. And I tried to put it in the Normie School District so when the kids graduate, they would have it. The Department of Transportation provide the curriculum, not only for EMT basic, firefighters basic, but they also provide the curriculum for first responders and paramedics. Why can't my kids in high school not being taught this?
Right. That's a great question. And I, too, back in the day, I got my EMT license. And I was on the track to become a firefighter. Got a call back to go, start my training and everything. I actually declined due to not wanting to deal with the good old boy network, because I was hearing that there was a lot of that going on within the St. Louis Fire Department. And I particularly didn't want to deal with that because I know how I am and I'd be spoken out, and then it'd create a hostile situation if I'm considered, a bad apple with my
opinion. Yeah, I understand.
You know,
let me tell you some
other
stuff they do.
The entire picture.
Blacks need to get on these fire boards too in these communities that they're in, because here on these fire boards is where they begin to float these bond issues that raises their salary and raises their pension. And it's not blacks. See, that firefighter will work in that district for a number of years, then retire and go back to the Missouri-Arkansas border, and you still paying them. Your kid's not getting anything out of it. Your kids get on the bus or get in their cruiser, their hood cruiser. They drive by that new facility on Natural Bridge. They drive by that new facility over there on in Ferguson. What is that? West Florissant and North Florissant. And they're going up to the county to get on jobs at McDonald's and other fast food restaurants where they're earning minimum wage, no benefit, no pensions. That's totally ridiculous.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I want to cut y'all, but we got 5 minutes to the live stream.
I understand.
Stream.
I could talk about this for a while. Send me that email.
Yes, I will send you that email, and I look forward to that information. Thank you, Colin. Once again, y'all, this is Collective Minds Radio. I'm Brother Kevin with my sister, Rigel Starr, and my brother, Mufasa Rai. We just had a great bill. We talked to Attorney Benjamin Crump about police brutality. Is it systematic? Is it a few bad apples? I think the consensus is it's definitely systematic, y'all. Rescue me if I'm wrong, but I think we all agree that it's systematic. And, you know, we got a lot of work to do. Yeah, we got a lot of work to do as far as not even letting the situation escalate to that point, because once it's in the hand of these prosecutors, state attorneys, or whatever have you, it's pretty much a wrap. We know what they're going to do, so we have to prevent and take the preventative measures to make sure that we're safe when we come in contact with these race soldiers. You know, I want to give y'all any last words. Rigel Starr, Mufasa Rai, we're about to wrap it up. This is Collective Minds. Thank all supporters. Once again, thank the guest, Benjamin Crump, and thanks to all the callers and supporters. Rigel Starr, it's on you.
Well, I just repeat, basically, I feel the same, and just having Crump on and listen to others, you know, it still helps me feel the same way. It is systematic, you know, but I do think that I won't say that every single police officer is bad, though, but I do think we have a lot of them, and we can't say who is and who's not, but the ones that choose to inflict harm, and the ones that hate us, and the ones who do these cruel things toward us, the system that I do agree is there, definitely, you know, hold them up, you know. So if the system wasn't there, they wouldn't be able to get away with it. So you got to know it's the system, you know. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right, Brother Mufasa, you got the last word.
I'm in agreement with y'all. It's systematic. And I appreciate Brother Crump coming on to clear up some things. Definitely helped me out, because I ain't going to front. I was feeling a certain type of way about the brother, but he cleared some things up to me. So I enjoyed him coming on.
Indeed, indeed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Again, Collective Minds Radio. Thanks to all the callers and supporters. Thanks to our special guest, Benjamin Crump, for tonight. Stay tuned, y'all. Next Sunday, we got some great shows coming up. Stay tuned. Call us. You know, follow us on all social media. Again, this is Collective Minds. And we'll keep y'all updated when we go at ISUPK and give them that work. But until then, we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Hey.
Peace, y'all. Peace.
Happy birthday to David Banner for his birthday coming up. I know they're planning a big party for him, so hopefully he's on as well.
Happy solo return, David Banner. Peace.
A dude that understands just what it took, just to be a man. Do they know? A dude that understands just what it took, just to be a man.
Some of y'all never heard Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, Adam J.